Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm excited to be joined today by Appalachian State Special Teams Coach Eric Link. Coach Link, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Keith, it's great to be here with you and all the listeners, and certainly excited to get a chance to share some ideas and some thoughts and try to find a way to get better today. So excited to be here.
Well, Coach, you've had just an incredible background here as you've come up through the ranks as a coach. But I think before we get into kind of your journey here, I want to understand a little bit more of your why. Why do you coach?
Okay. Keith, for me, my coaching why or why I do this is coaching to me is teaching. And at the core, my foundation is a high school football coach and teacher. And that's what I've kind of always wanted to do. That's how I got in the profession. And for me, it's about developing dynamic and meaningful relationships with my players and with the men that I'm working with on a daily basis, the coaches and the kids. And that's really why I do what I do, is to try to have a positive impact on everybody that I'm associated with and that I get the opportunity to work with on a day in, day out basis. So to me, I mean, my why is those relationships that you get to build with your players and with the staff that you're with.
Coach, you've had, I think, a pretty incredible journey here through your coaching career. I believe it's 15 years now. You have a national championship on your belt, your time at Auburn. You've been to bowl games, but you've also coached at the high school level and experienced that as well. Talk to us about your coaching journey and getting your start. And as you're going through, Coach, maybe some key things you've learned along the way.
Yeah, Keith, I think probably like a lot of other coaches that are listening, you know, I was very, very fortunate to have a high school football coach that impacted my life in a positive way and really helped guide my journey getting into coaching and, you know, through athletics, and was very fortunate to get an opportunity at Drake University to go play at a little FCS school in the Pioneer League, and got my first exposure to winning and championships, and got to play for a guy by the name of Rob Ash, who had an unbelievable career, 30 plus years as a head coach, and I believe is the winningest coach at every school he's been at, which is pretty incredible. But got to play for Coach Ash, and then got my start as a coach, worked there for 2 years for him, and actually started on the defensive side of the ball, and then from there went up to Iowa State University in Ames, and was fortunate to work for a guy by the name of Dan McCarney, and then actually worked for three different head coaches in 3.5 years up there, and with three different staffs, which was an amazing opportunity because, you know, not necessarily the ideal situation, but it was amazing because I got exposed to a lot of different coaches, a lot of different teaching methodologies, and was just fortunate for my time there. And from there, I actually went to the high school level and took a job in Keller, Texas, and got a chance to work with Kevin Atkinson, who does a great job building programs, and was very fortunate to be a part of that. And then after that, I got a really good opportunity to rejoin Coach Chizik, who I was with at Iowa State when he was at Auburn, and gave me an opportunity to come work with him and Jay Boulware, who was the special teams coordinator at the time, and got a chance to be with those guys in 2010, and which was a remarkable season. The year we won the national championship, and then after that, I rejoined Coach Ash, who was now at Montana State University. Was with him for 2 years out there and had two really, really remarkable years, and won the Big Sky Conference and made good runs in the playoffs, and really got an opportunity to work with the special teams as a special teams coordinator and coach the tight ends, and really was a phenomenal place to be. And then after those 2 years, I went back to Auburn, this time with Coach Malzahn, and spent 3 years with him and got a chance to play for another national championship in 2013. And unfortunately, came out on the wrong end of that one, but I had three really incredible years. And then I decided to take a high school head job back in my hometown and really try to resurrect a program that was, you know, had been on hard times, and we were able to do some things in just 2 short years and get that program up and running. And then I had an opportunity to go back to the Division I level and work for Skip Holtz at Louisiana Tech. And then when Coach Drinkwitz called and had the opportunity at Appalachian State, it was really just too good to pass up. And he's been a good friend of mine, and we've worked together in the past, and just fortunate to be with him. But I think, you know, a couple of things, and I don't know that any of this is cutting edge, but a couple of the things that I've learned along the way is, like I said before, coaching is teaching. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be a great teacher. It's not what I know as the coach. It's what my players know and what they can execute. And I think that is critical. No matter what level you're at, you have to be able to teach the game, teach the fundamentals and techniques, and be able to relay that to your players and make sure they can understand and execute it. Probably the most important thing that I've learned along the way, that it is about relationships. It's about, you know, you can really impact and mold a young person throughout your coaching if you have a great relationship with them. I really believe that. And so I think that's the foundation of everything. And that's a critical component as well. And then probably, again, nothing that you haven't heard before, but it's about the players, not the plays. Again, what can your players do? What can they execute? What's their skill set? What are their strengths and what are their weaknesses? And then you build around that. I think you have to be able to, as an effective coach, you have to be able to identify those things. And once you do that, I think you can really build something special.
Coach, you've moved on now to be the special teams coordinator at App State. And looking at your bio, I really like this quote from Coach Drinkwitz. He said, "Eric is a championship coach who understands that our culture is reflected in our special teams play." And really, when you think about culture is always reflected in the behaviors, right? And so in football, a lot of those behaviors are what we see on game day, whether that be a Friday night or a Saturday or a Sunday. We see that out on the field. When you're thinking of that and thinking about the culture there, what is it that you want to reflect from your special teams? What are we going to see that does reflect that culture?
Well, I think first and foremost, when we talk about special teams, we're talking, you know, how can we make them special? How can we, you know, separate ourselves? Like you said, so when you cut the film on Sunday morning or you're watching as a spectator on television, what are you going to see? And for me, I call it the E3. The first, you know, is energy. We want to be the most excited football team on the field. So whether we're going on the field for a kickoff, whether we're going on the field to punt the ball, whether punt return, whatever phase it is, we want to make sure that we're the most excited team on the field during that time. The second thing is effort, you know, and it's fanatical. We want to have fanatical effort in everything that we're doing. And at the end of the day, it's what you control. No matter how talented we are, we can always control the effort that we put forth. And so that's a critical component. And then the third part of E3 is execution. And kind of what I talk about with that is we want to have a sniper mentality. Special teams are different from offense and defense because we don't get a series. We don't get a series of plays. You don't get three, you know, plays. You get one chance to make your opportunity. And so we want to have a sniper's mentality, and a sniper gets one chance to do their job, and we want to have that same mentality, whether it's our kicker kicking a field goal, whether it's our, you know, R3 running down on kickoff, whatever the case may be, we have to execute at a high level and do our job, and you're out there for one play at a time, and you either get the job done or you don't. And so when we talk about our special teams mentality, and kind of how we're going to make it special. It comes down to E3 for us. It comes down to our energy. It comes down to our effort. And it comes down to the level of execution that we're gonna take part in. And then really the other thing I think you're gonna see, Keith, is you're gonna see a special teams unit that's very simple schematically, that allows the players to play fast, but is gonna be diverse with how we present that scheme. You know, whether that's from, you know, from the punt standpoint, formationally, motions, how we're gonna, you know, try to put stress on the return units, and, you know, or that's, you know, from a punt return standpoint, are we gonna come after you? Are we gonna overload you? Are we gonna max return you? Are we gonna get double teams? You know, how is that gonna look? So we want to be simple schematically, so our guys are playing fast, but try to present it in a diverse way. And then, to me, this is probably the key thing is personnel. You know, putting our players in positions to be successful and identifying, again, what they do well and what they don't do well, and making sure that we're plugging them in, you know, in places where they can do ultimately what we're asking them to do. So, again, it's E3, it's being simple, and it's putting your personnel in the right spots.
Coach, when I look at special teams, I really believe that it still is a very undercoached phase of the game. Definitely at the high school level, having been at the college level myself, I think even sometimes there, and probably wasn't really aware of that until it was my, I tell this story probably often when I have a special teams coordinator on. It was my first day on the job at the college level, and that day we had Frank Novak in, had just retired from the Green Bay Packers not too long before that. And he clinicked us for a day and a half, and I honestly filled up three notebooks worth of notes. I was only going to coach the kick return team, but the attention to detail he had was incredible. And I think, you know, you can make a huge impact on a game when you think of the place you were as well as the place you are now. And you talk about maybe big plays in football history. You go to Auburn and you think of the kick six, which I believe you were on the coaching staff then, correct?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
And then you look at App State. Absolutely. And go back to 2007, and you have a huge upset at Michigan. So, case in point, a place you've been, a place you're at right now, where we've seen that happen, where special teams can absolutely make the difference in the game. So, that being said, with the limited time you do get, with all the attention to detail that you can and want to put into it, how do you go about that and coordinate all those things?
Well, you know, you're exactly right, Keith. I mean, it comes down to being extremely detailed, being organized. You get a limited amount of time to get a lot of work in, and so you have to be really calculated. And I think one of the things that you know, I've been fortunate to kind of learn from the guys that I've been around and also what I've done throughout my career is, you know, it's no different than offensive and, you know, an offensive and a defensive plan from the standpoint of you have to start with what you're going to install, what's your base concepts, what's your base, you know, scheme, the foundation of what you're trying to do. And you have to make sure that you're calculated with how you're going to install that, what you're going to do in your meeting time, what you're going to do in your walkthrough time. Everything has to be planned out and detailed so you're maximizing your time. And if you're not doing that, I think you're missing the boat from really getting the most out of, like you said, an undercoached area. And I don't think you see that as much on the Division I level anymore, but you certainly see it other places. And I think that's usually the difference. It's the difference that you see in the detail with technique that's being executed on film, with you know, in situational based football. And you're exactly right. I mean, it's very rarely do things just happen by happenstance. I mean, I think there's you know, there's a lot of time and effort to go into that. And like I said, from meeting with the staff, your core special team staff that are going to be, you know, exactly what they're doing each day at practice and exactly what it needs to look like and exactly what they're coaching, and then meeting with your kids and trying to get the most out of the time that you get, whether it's, a 10-minute period, whether it's 2 10-minute periods, whether it's a 5-minute walkthrough pre-practice period, just trying to maximize that time. And it, you're exactly right. It comes down to organization. It comes down to details, because you really can impact games and with unbelievably big plays. And you're exactly right. Probably, arguably, one of the biggest plays in App State history was a special teams play when they blocked a kick at Michigan, and you know, the same thing at Auburn with the kick six, just an incredible play, and guys that were executing at a high level and in a high pressure environment, you know, and that's what it comes down to and comes back to is, you know, being able to practice that those situational plays, and I think that's really, you know, what separates you. If you're able to have a simple scheme, and your players understand what they're able to do and execute it at a high level, it allows you to spend a little bit more time on those situational moments and those situational football, especially in the kicking game, which is so can be so critical.
Coach, when you look at what you've learned now and being at the higher levels and having the ability yourself to put that focus on teaching all the things you need to within the special teams game, how would you go about, I guess, applying that to the high school level where, for the most part, I think the paradigm has been you're going to take your specialists and they're going to get their time and work, and then we're just going to put guys out there and get some reps at running down and maybe not get the focus we might need on that technique. And a lot of times, not necessarily the scheme that breaks down that causes a big play against us. It's usually a breakdown or not having an understanding of the correct technique to make that scheme work. So how would you balance that and go about attacking, you know, some of that, making your special teams better if you were headed back to the high school level?
Well, I think, you know, just, again, making a commitment to it, making a commitment to those fundamentals and techniques. And, you know, so many of them translate to offensive and defensive football. When you're talking about blocking with leverage, when you're talking about coveraging, you know, covering with leverage, you know, playing with great stance, great base, you know, blow delivery, punch, all those things that are core fundamentals in the game of football carry over obviously to the kicking game as well. It starts with making a commitment to it from a practice standpoint. And not just, like you said, throwing your specialists out there and, you know, punting the ball pre-practice and kicking, you know, kicking the football and having your returners catch a few balls here and there. And then, you know, come Thursday, the day before the game, you line up your 11 guys and make sure everybody knows where they're aligned. And then, oh, yeah, go execute the scheme. It's got to be a progression just like anything else you're going to teach. You're going to start with the base fundamentals and techniques, and then you're going to gradually work up to, you know, the big picture scheme and what we're asking you to do. And I'm a believer in that drill work. That's when you're identifying who can do what. That's when you're, you know, IDing your personnel strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, I think if your drill work is designed in a way to be able to maximize that, I think it's going to help you not only maximize your time, but it's going to help you make sure you're putting your guys in the right spots to execute those assignments. So, you know, I would personally, you know, each day I'd break it up into at least 2 10-minute segments and have an emphasis on coverage and have an emphasis on returns and those fundamentals associated with it. The other thing I think that's really powerful that we're doing here at App State that I think anybody can do is having a kind of an early in practice or even pre-practice circuit where it's not necessarily – you're going 100%, you know, a physical exertion, but you're maximizing your reps and everybody's involved that is could possibly be on a special teams rep. And you're working on things like how to fair catch, how to, you know, in the event that you have to throw that guy out there and fair catch a football versus a pooch kick, or you're working on scooping and scoring. You know, so many times you see a block kick behind the line of scrimmage and guys, you know, beat the ball up and kick it and they end up, you know, kicking the ball out of bounds instead of scooping and scoring, you know, and making it really a true momentum play. Or, you know, you're working on fundamentals of block destruction. And again, you know, your offensive players aren't getting those fundamentals. You're working on some semblance of tackling and a fundamental that's associated with tackling. One aspect of a block circuit, blocking a punt or blocking a field goal. And everybody's going through this circuit and they're not getting a million reps. It's a 5-minute period and they're getting one rep and they're going to the next one and they're going to the next one. And again, this is with your entire football team, other than your quarterbacks and your offensive linemen that are not on any special teams. And you're just stealing reps and banking those reps throughout spring ball, throughout fall camp. And then so in that event that you get to that third team, left tight end on your kickoff return team, and you throw a guy out there that's a defensive end and has never caught a kickoff, and your opponent pooch kicks it, and now that guy's got to fair catch it, and you're sweating bullets because he's never done it, or he's got limited reps at it, and that's what that circuit allows you to do. Again, just maximizing that time that you have. So I think that's critical, and that's just one example. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but one example that I think we're doing a good job with right now at App.
Coach, when you look at now getting your reps, right? So you're talking about spending some individual time there, working the skills, working all that understanding. You go out there and get your reps. I know on offense and defense, we've become very attuned to making sure we understand what we need in situational football. How much do you get situational within your special teams? Let's say, even something just like punt.
Yeah, I think it's, there's kind of two phases, I guess. Number one, you have the situations that you're going to have to execute, whether it's a backed up punt situation and, does your protection change? Does your alignment change? Obviously the operation, you got to be quicker getting the ball out. It could be punting for a kickoff, after safety instead of kicking off. There could be, a couple different situations that you're working there. Taking a safety as a punt team as opposed to, at the end of the game. So those are all different situations that you're going to work at different times and probably work at least once a week, once you get going in the season. Then I think there's also the next level of that. From a preparation standpoint, when you're evaluating your opponent and looking at your opponent is, I think, there's a lot of guys, whether it's cognizant, whether they're aware of it or not, that are still situational down and distance based. Mm-hmm. From a standpoint of, maybe I'm going to come after it if it's fourth and five or less, or maybe I'm going to come after it if, they're going to punt the ball from inside their own 20 or 30. Or I'm going to be more max return if it's a longer down a distance. Whatever the case may be, typically you're still going to have those tendencies with, from a situational standpoint, whether it's down a distance, whether it's time in the game, whether it's field position, whatever the case may be, where you can really take advantage of that if you're aware of it and you know about it. And so I think it's kind of there's two prongs to situational special teams. Obviously what you're repping and what you have to be able to execute from your standpoint, but then also what the opponent's going to do in certain situations.
Coach, as you look at the special teams game, certainly we see trends develop in all phases. What trends are you seeing right now in special teams?
Keith, I think one trend that I'm definitely seeing here, especially the last couple years, is just the multiplicity that teams are using with their kickoff return schemes, from the standpoint of being able to get multiple double teams at different points, first level, second level, but also the ability to, not use a double team and use a lot of single blocks or what I call ambush trap blocks. I think you're seeing more and more teams go to that. And I think that's something that we're all going to have to think about as the game continues to evolve. And I think one thing you're going to see probably sooner rather than later is, the NCAA and the Football Rules Committee putting mandates on trying to eliminate, double teams or double team wedge blocks. They've already done, a couple years back, went from, having 3-man wedges to only having 2-man wedges. And so I think you're seeing a teams become a lot more multiple from a kickoff return standpoint, which puts stress, on your kickoff cover team. But, but also ultimately at the end of the day is probably much safer for the game. And then on the flip side of that, I think you're seeing the same thing from a kickoff coverage standpoint. You're seeing teams become a lot more exotic with their cover schemes and loops and twists and, you know, condensing the field down to a much tighter alignment and trying to get teams to work a field return versus a boundary return. And so I think you're seeing, you know, a lot of guys go to some different looks with that, and it does present some issues and can present some issues on both sides of that equation. But I think ultimately at the end of the day, it's, you know, as the game evolves, us as special teams coordinators, you know, are trying to become more and more creative to make sure that we're still getting what we need to get from an execution standpoint, from scheme standpoint, but also doing it to put our players in a safe position as well.
Coach, when you look at the Alliance of American Football and they've eliminated the kickoff, their answer to the onside kick is to run a fourth and long play. I forget what it is, fourth and 12, I believe. Would you be disappointed to see the kickoff regulated out of the game? Do you think that's necessary? You think it's going to happen?
You know, I don't think it's necessary. I think, and again, let me start by this. If we think it's going to make the game safer, then by all means, let's do it. I'm all about player safety and what's going to make the game safer. I personally, I think that's one of the most exciting elements to the game. You know, obviously I'm biased. I'm a special teams coordinator. I would love to see it continue because it is. I mean, there's so many. You think about throughout the course of football and throughout the years, all the exciting plays that were made on a kickoff, whether it's from the return standpoint or, you know, there's nothing more exciting than, you know, a tackle inside the 20 on a kickoff that, you know, just really, whether it starts the game, whether it's a momentum shifter, whatever the case may be. I mean, I think, you know, and it comes back to, you know, how we measure success on special teams is we're going to look at field position like everybody else, but most importantly, you know, average start point. Where is the opponent, you know, starting with the football, and then where are we starting with the football when we get it? And then the second thing is momentum plays. You know, that's how special teams impacts games, is with the momentum plays. And I think if you take the kickoff out of the game, I think you're really, you know, you're taking away some of the most exciting parts or aspects of the game. Again, I'm all about player safety. If that's what we collectively feel is best, then that's what we need to do. But I certainly would hope to see it continue. And I think there's other ways that you can, or, you know, other things that you can do to make that particular play safer.
Well, I agree with you. I think it is all about studying this and understanding it better. And, you know, it's part of what we do here at USA Football is try to bring together some of, I guess, the brain trust and, you know, the coaches, the medical field, all those kinds of people to figure out what is the best for it. So, but I would agree with you. Player safety certainly is always our concern. And I know from just the different schemes you can run, you don't have to have double teams. You don't have to have those, you know, you used to see them all the time. They'd make highlights every year, those big hits. Doesn't have to be that way because kickoff could be, it really is a timing play. I used to put, you know, receivers up front at the college level because they could run and time up a block, and they certainly weren't going to, you know, be knocking people down left and right. So I think it's just a different way of thinking about it. So I appreciate you sharing your perspective there. Well, Coach, to wrap things up, when you look at all the things that you do as a coach, what would you say is the one thing you do that you really feel gives your guys the winning edge?
Keith, I think, you know, it really comes back to being simple with what you're doing, having a simple scheme, because it allows your kids to play fast. We all know that, you know, the less a player has to think, the more they can play to their true God-given physical ability. And I think when you simplify what you're asking them to do and give them a very limited number of tools to execute their assignment and to perfect their craft, I think you're really putting them in a situation to be successful and ultimately have a winning edge. Plus, I think what that allows you to do from a special team standpoint is it allows you to spend, like I said earlier, spend a little bit more time on situational football. And there's so many critical situations in the kicking game that can come up, you know, whether it's obviously the onsides or the hands team or, you know, fake punts, defending fake punts, you know, blocking kicks, protecting the punter, protecting the kicker. I mean, there's so many situational aspects that are associated that are critical to a game and to the outcome of a game potentially, that you have to be able to, you know, allot and spend the time necessary there. So I think for us and for our guys, you know, we're allowing them and we're putting them in a position to be successful because we're going to be simple. We're going to be simple in what we're doing and what we're asking them to do and give them a couple of basic tools to, you know, perform their assignment and execute at a high level. And that works twofold. That puts them in a situation to be successful, but then also allows us to spend a little bit more time on that situational football that presents itself that, as we know, is oftentimes can be the difference in winning and losing.
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time, and I know it's an exciting time for you guys at App State as you guys take over the program and get it kicked off under Coach Drinkwitz. So best of luck to you and the Mountaineers in 2019.
Keith, thanks so much for having me. It's been an absolute blast and an honor to be on the podcast, and certainly look forward to listening for years to come.
Check out our new Twitter at FBDEV Coach. We're doing some great stuff there every single day. We're adding to it as we go through the off season here. We want it to be a great resource for coaches out there. Also, check out our systems at footballdevelopment.com if you are looking for some cutting-edge techniques. We put it together in our advanced tackling system as well as our contact system. I also highly recommend you checking out our system for building culture, and we partner with Focus 3 and Brian Kite, and Brian's done a phenomenal job in helping organizations around the country from corporate America to the education world to teams like Ohio State. If you read the book Above the Line, all of that book was about what Brian and his father Tim did to help out the Buckeyes. You could go get our system at usafootball.com/Focus 3.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.